Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
It's the Empire of the Suns podcast. I'm Kevin Zimmerman, joined by Kellen Olson as always. We're going to talk about the Suns' possible trades during draft day. Now, there are two ways we're going to go about that. In a podcast coming up, we're going to talk about, can they deal for any established NBA veterans? Now, though, we're going to talk about just moving around the draft, basically. And I think we both agree that number 16 pick is the biggest thing because we think they're going to take DeAndre Ayton number one. And like 31, whatever, like maybe they move up a few spots, but I think 16 is the one that has a lot of value in terms of shifting around.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think where we should start by talking about this is saying the Suns have made it clear through basically the benefit of having Ryan McDonough on our air like once a week throughout the season. We hear him say the same things every now and then. And the key thing was that they wanted to be aggressive. There was a big story, I believe it was Scott Bordeaux, and then McDonough was like saying it in other airwaves later on, a couple days later, where it was just like, we are ready to go. Like, we've seen Devin Booker's progression in year three because of him being this good, because of the way TJ Warren has played to start the year, because Josh Jackson we have, and he wasn't even playing that well at that time, and now he looks great. And that was when there was like a... The low-key thing people are going to forget, mostly. There are going to be people out there that always remember this, but when this was a 21-win team, they were actually at one point like nearly a 500 team when Devin Booker was healthy, like 50 games through the season or so, 40, 50 games through the season or so. So there was appeal there to see how they could be a not one of the 3 to 5 worst teams in the league when everyone was fully healthy. Like, it's not crazy to think that if Josh Jackson didn't have a nightmare start in the first half of his rookie year, Devin Booker was healthy the whole season, and like Brandon Knight was healthy the whole season, then, and they didn't go through the Bledsoe stuff, and that would have happened over the season. Oh yeah, and they wouldn't have fired their coach.
If they had a coach.
Yeah, 3 games into the year, and they would have had a real coach. They could have won probably like 27 to 30 games. It's not crazy to think that. So with that expectation and how easy it is to say that, comes the line of thinking that they want to be aggressive this summer. Now, why do they want to be aggressive this summer specifically? I think there's a couple of different areas. One, they have a really young roster and all of their best pieces by far are young. Their most experienced pieces are Brandon Knight, Tyson Chandler, and Jared Dudley. And Chandler and Dudley both expire at the end of next season. Knight is on a 2 to 3 year deal, but he is coming off a year where he didn't play, and a year before that where he was one of the worst players in the league just from an overall playing perspective. And then, honestly, from NBA experience, it's like TJ Warren, Alex Len, who probably isn't going to be here next year, and then Devin Booker. Devin Booker has twice as many minutes played in his career than Troy Daniels. So to put that into emphasis on how much Booker has played already, and also like the lack of help around there. Like, I think I did the same thing when Isaiah Cannon came over, and I think Booker had more career minutes or was like just about there. The other main point here is they're going to have a little bit of salary cap space this year. This offseason, they can have a lot more if they make a couple of trades. They can have, I believe, like 15 to 20 million is what we settled on a couple podcasts ago, like 18.
Yeah, we settled
20.
In that general area.
But the big move comes the year after when Tyson Chandler and Jared Dudley are off the books, 2019. That's when they can really start spending. But I think the most important thing here is that we haven't mentioned yet, they're in an 8-year playoff drought. They have Devin Booker, who is clearly the franchise player now. Like, if there was any doubt about that after year two, there's no doubt about that after year three that he's the franchise player. He has said a couple of times, I'm sick of losing. This is the last year. I don't want to make the playoffs. I'm serious. Like, that's a goal and everything. But at the same time, he does want to see the office, and I think the front office do stuff, but the most important side note is there, the front office is telling him we're going to do stuff. So I don't know if I'm saying that the front office is screwing themselves by setting expectations for their star player that they're going to do a lot of good stuff, but I'm just saying they have set that expectation. And the most important thing here, before I take it back to you, is that Ryan McDonough's contract expires in 2020. He has two off seasons to really get this going. If this team isn't winning 40 games in 2020, like that two seasons from now, then he has to be out of his job, right? Like, there's no way he makes it out of that.
Yeah, so the pick accumulation that he's gotten,
that's the other part, yeah,
is you got to sell if you're him. Like, that's just your timeline as an NBA GM. It's you're at the peak where you've built up all these assets and now it's go time. You've got your star, yeah. And so when we bring it back to the 16th pick, what can they do with that pick? Now, you can't do a lot with it alone, but you look at Miami picks, Suns' own picks, Bucks picks. Miami and Milwaukee's picks probably are the ones that you look at because you have no idea, like, what NBA GMs don't know what the Suns are going to be. Like, I don't know their value, but Miami and Milwaukee have more clear trajectories just because, look, Milwaukee's locked in to winning with Giannis, and Miami's locked into a bunch of contracts to kind of good role players. So that being said, I think those two things combined with number 16, that's where we talk about moving up in the draft.
I think it's a really good point to bring up the Miami situation because Danny LaRue has been like the chief guy from The Athletic, has been the chief guy in saying this. It's easy for us to say like they shouldn't trade the Miami pick because we don't know what it's going to be. I disagree with you there because looking at their salary sheet, Josh Richardson is signed through 2021, but the only other guys with guaranteed money are Bam Adebayo and Kelly Olynyk. So they really don't have any great young pieces either. I guess Justice Winslow is somewhere in that department as well. Adebayo, Richardson isn't that old, but they do have a lot of older pieces. And that's where I hesitate as to how do you know how good that team is going to be in 3 years.
Yeah.
It's easy for us to say that, but Ryan McDonough won't have a job in 2021, potentially.
And neither will a lot of GMs, so I guess maybe that's not even in the conversation. But
so if he's sitting there at 16 and he thinks that Mikal Bridges or Miles Bridges or Wendell Carter or Trae Young or whoever we're going to go over today is the piece that they need to go over the top, and they say, yeah, we like 16, the Milwaukee first and player X, but we need the Miami pick too, he's probably going to do it.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to sit there and go, oh, man, like, we should really hold on to
that. I really like that pick.
I really like that pick. It's going to be something where you just kind of have to give it up because of the situation that they're in right now.
So, do you want to go over teams or do you want to go over, like, which players?
I think we can go with teams first.
Okay.
Do we agree that, like, anywhere from 7 ahead of 7 is kind of just too much?
Yeah, that's you're going to give up Josh Jackson or something.
I don't think they're going to give up Josh Jackson, but it would be like you have to give up like 4 first-round picks. Like, you'd have to give up 16. You'd have to give up the Milwaukee pick. You'd have to give up your unprotected first next year, and then maybe the Miami pick too. Look, the Suns can do that. I mean, everyone is saying like the Luka Doncic thing at 4, like if he falls to 4 isn't going to happen. I mean, I guess it's not going to happen, but if there's a team that's like desperate enough to give up 4 first-round picks to move up and get Doncic, it's the Suns.
Yeah.
That's the length of how much we're going to talk about that, though.
Like, that'd be fun, but yeah.
Yeah, but that's as long as we're going to talk about it. I think you look at teams specifically like Orlando at 6, and then who's picking 5th right now? Why am I blanking?
Oh, well.
Chicago? All right, well, I'm going to Google that. No, Chicago's at 7.
What?
Sacramento is the team I'm thinking of because that's where they were in the lottery standings. Dallas at 5 just needs.
I forgot Dallas existed.
Dallas needs a guy next to Dennis Smith Jr. Like, they need all those teams: Atlanta, Memphis, Sacramento, Orlando. It's not like they already have one or two established young stars. Like, they don't have any.
Yeah,
they need to keep trying to get those guys. So let's kind of run through the teams here briefly, and then kind of look at afterwards and say like 3 to 4 players that we think the Suns should target in these situations. Okay. Chicago is at 7. I will have a piece out fairly soon. If you're listening to this and it's not out, it will be out fairly soon. that goes over these situations 7 through 12. Chicago has Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine as like their two quote-unquote main young pieces, and then they have whatever Chris Dunn, Bobby Portis, Cristiano Felicio, all those guys, whatever they turn into. They don't have a guy yet, which is what they need more than anything, but they just need to keep adding good, really good young pieces like Markkanen, like LaVine, if you're a Zach LaVine guy, I guess, which some aren't, some are. It makes too much sense for them to go get someone like Wendell Carter Jr. or Britt. Like, all the guys in that range fit, technically.
They're not dealing that.
Yeah, like, doesn't Trae Young sound like the third guard in, like, a LaVine Dunn guard rotation, which is, I know, not great. But doesn't, like, Trae Young sound pretty fun with those guys to a certain extent?
He sounds fun just because the Bulls need fun. Yeah.
Yeah, both bridges.
Sorry, I'm being mean to LaVine. And,
well, I'm about to be mean to Justin Holiday. They play Justin Holiday a lot, and one of the Bridgeses would do really well in that spot, Wendell Carter Jr. I think that's the problem more than anything for me, is that, like, I just can't see them passing on more than, like, two or three guys there that are going to be there. Like, Michael Porter Jr. could very well be there. He's a guy that makes sense for them to a certain extent. It's very tough to see how
they're like the Suns, basically. It's you take best talent. It's not a question.
They also have, like, pretty good pick control. That's another thing the Suns are going to look to. If they're looking at this deal, they're going to say, you guys don't have any seconds, you guys don't have any first for, like, 3 years or whatever. We can offer you that, essentially.
Cleveland at 8 is interesting just because of LeBron, and you don't know how they're going to approach it. I tend to think that they just need to take the best player. Like, if Michael Porter falls there, then you take him and you say, LeBron, please come back. We got a dude who you can defer to and can shoot and score, and you don't have to score 50 points just to lose in the NBA Finals. And even though guys in that range might not be super ready to go, I think you can sell that. And so I don't think that they're going to trade out of there.
The flip side,
yeah,
which is why I believe of the teams in the lottery, like, we're talking 1 through 13, 1 through 14, that's how many teams are in the lottery, Kellen, get it together. They are the most interesting team by far as a trade, because ESPN's Brian Windhorst, this is my saving grace point, I'm not going to let it go anytime soon, said on the Low Post, I believe it was one of the ESPN podcasts, that the Cavaliers think LeBron James is leaving. They don't know, because no one knows about LeBron James, and he might not even know what his decision is yet, decision 2.0. But they think. So they're looking at their roster. They have these guys like George Hill, Kevin Love, Jordan Clarkson, Kyle Korver. They have two guys signed that are under the age of 25 through next season. Under the age of 25, the Suns' entire roster is under the age of 25. It is Chetty Osman and Ante Zizic. Those are the two guys they have. That's it.
I like Osman, but
I like Chetty a lot, but it's rough.
It is rough.
Here is the zinger. They do not have any serious pick control in a while. They are going to send their 2019 first to Atlanta if it lands between 11 and 30, which I guess it couldn't if LeBron leaves and they tank or whatever. But they own no second round picks until 2021. And second round picks are actually low key important when your young core is non-existent. It doesn't exist. So if the Suns were to come in and offer 16, the Milwaukee pick and the Miami pick, and a player, or like some combination of 2 to 3 picks and like an appealing player like TJ Warren or one of the power forwards, for example, that is where I believe you can actually make some traction on a potential deal. Now, the direct counter to this is take the best guy, make LeBron think we're serious, we're not going to accumulate assets and do all this. But what has that front office done lately? LeBron didn't sign off on a lot of the things that have happened lately. People say GM LeBron. According to everything we've heard, it has not been GM LeBron in the past year.
It's GM Colby Altman, who might be really desperate.
Do you think I'm stretching this too much? Do you think it's realistic for the Cavs to look at that at all? Or
I just think you have to do the thing that you think will help LeBron stay. So unless they have like some really firm indication of him wanting to leave, which I don't think they're going to know by the draft. Like, I think that's soon, man. That's 2 weeks. Let's say the finals get stretched to 6 games somehow. That's, I don't know what day you're putting that, but you're going to have to get an answer out of LeBron like within a week.
Okay. We're going to come back to this spot later, because this is like going to be the spot where I say, like, how much would you give up if X player was on the board? Like, how high would we go in our potential? Because I think 8 is the most realistic spot from that standpoint. I know you just kind of said, like, turning down the notion of it being realistic. But for the sake of trade, fake trade discussion, it's fairly realistic in terms of logic, at least.
9 Knicks, do we have to talk about it? They're pretty screwed. They need some guy.
They just need, they need dudes. The Suns need dudes. They have Kristaps, Neal Akina, Moutier. They need another solid young piece, kind of like Chicago does. I guess the trick is that Porzingis could be out all of next season. So does that in some way help them like decide, like, yeah, we'll take a couple extra picks? I don't really see the logic in that, but I kind of brought it up as a point just because they're the Knicks and who knows.
I don't know their front office at all. Like, I don't know their identity. Like, what do they do?
It seems way too obvious. Like, one of the bridges is almost certainly going to be on the board when they pick, and it's like, put the solid athletic wing in between Neal Akina, Moutier, and Porzingis on the wing, because they have these guys like Tim Hardaway Jr. and Courtney Lee, who are nice players. Lance Thomas is another one, but those guys aren't like your serious like pieces of the future or anything. Speaking of keeping it short, the Sixers at 10. In case you've not been keeping up on what Hinkie did, they have not traded any of their future picks, literally none. They own 2 firsts and 3 seconds this year, 2 firsts and 2 seconds next year, and 1 first and 3 seconds the year after that. Oh, yeah. And on their roster, they already have Ben Simmons. They already have Joel Embiid. They already have Robert Covington. They already have Timothy Luol-Okorobo. They have all these guys like Furkan Korkmaz. They have Jonah Bolden overseas. They have Lasort overseas. They have all these guys, and they still have so many picks. They have a ton of cap space. There's no reason for them to move that pick.
What do you think GM David Griffin's going to do with that pick? Keep it.
He's gonna be like, oh, we need a dude.
If anyone didn't know, that was a joke because Brian Colangelo resigned.
They're going to take a Bridges, and that Bridges is going to be like
the best Bridges.
The third best player in this draft because he's playing with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Like, it's kind of like by default. How do you describe the Hornets at 11, Kevin? Because I have no idea. I don't even know how to attack this.
It's fun to spend money on things. I don't know how to describe it. It's like, I'm thinking of a really weird, like, it's like Michael Jordan just loves like a restaurant like TGIF Fridays and like just like spending lots of money there, even though it's just okay. And he's like this basketball savant, but he just likes, I don't know where I'm going with this. It's like
that's Bobby, how you talk about Flay, this. I don't know.
Who's the guy who's the TGIF guy? Was that Bobby Flay? No.
Oh,
the guy with the spiky hair. It's like him.
Guy
like,
Fieri?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know my chefs, apparently. It's like him, like, endorsing Fridays. Like, it's like, why do you like these, like, mediocre things? You should know better. That's Michael Jordan's situation.
Yeah, there is no way to describe their roster. Their pick situation is fine. They own all their firsts. They don't have a second round pick in 2020 or 2021.
It's Kupchak now in charge too. So it's like,
that is the wild card that we have to mention, is that he could look at this roster and say, yeah, Batum gone, Marvin Williams gone. I guess I'll keep Zeller and Kid Gilchrist and see what we have here. We'll give Malik Monk starter minutes now. Okay, do I want to get more young talent right now? Okay, I'll take 16 and 31 in exchange for 11, along with like a protected future, a heavily protected future first round pick or something. I guess this is where Kemba comes in at some point, where it could be like a trade down that involves Kemba somehow. Like, I really don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
They're the team where you look at them and I think, I don't know. I just don't know. The Clippers at 12 and 13 are fascinating because Jerry West always likes to do stuff. He is a deal maker.
He loves not having draft picks or young players.
this is the most interesting spot for outside of Cleveland, which I already said was, because this is a spot where the Suns could become infatuated with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Zaire Smith or Robert Williams or whoever it is that they're targeting at 16 the most. They could look at 12 and say, flashback to Archie Goodwin year. Like, oh my God, he's not going to fall to us. We have to trade up a couple spots. Didn't they trade up one spot for Archie?
One or two.
Yeah, and that could happen here again. Shai is the guy that makes a lot of sense here in terms of, man, would they do 31 for this? Like, we don't need all these rookies. Would we do Milwaukee for this just to move up four spots and make sure we get Shai? Shai could fall to 16. Whoever they would trade up for at 12 could fall to 16 unless it was like Kevin Knox or Robert Williams. Then I wouldn't be so sure.
Yeah.
Their situation is kind of the same thing. They have a bunch of veterans. They don't really have any signature young players. So they're going to keep, I don't see them like trading back from both of these picks. They pick again at 13. They pick at 12 and 13. So
yeah,
like 13 and 16, 12 and 16, whatever it is. I guess like picking up an extra pick along the way wouldn't be so bad for them. And particularly though, I'm looking at it from the Suns standpoint and they like get enamored with a dude that they hope falls to 16 and they're sitting there at 10 and they're
the
just
the thing
like,
is
twitching.
About the guys in that range is like when you mention Shai and Zaire, it's like who, if you're McDonough, you're just banking on them turning out like to be a rotation player in like 2 years, you would hope. I guess Zaire could play now and be limited in what he does, but it's like there's no one there that's super gonna help you win next year, I don't think. Maybe in 2 years. So that's the weird thing about the Clippers picks, and basically when you're after the 10th or 11th pick is there, I guess 11, there's not that many guys who are gonna actually be helping you that much this year. So I think that said, do you want to just circle back and give your, if you're moving up to 8, what you would have to give up?
Let's look at players really quickly. I wrote something on ArizonaSports.com a while ago that was trade up options. That's going to be back circling around the site if you want to take a look. The main names that we can cross off are DeAndre Ayton, future son DeAndre Ayton, Luka Doncic, Jaren Jackson, Mohamed Bamba, and Marvin Bagley. It seems like that's like the default top five. If one of those guys falls to 6, I don't see Orlando passing on any of those guys.
No.
So the leftover from that is Trae Young, Michael Porter Jr., Wendell Carter, the Bridgeses, Trae Young, and Knox, Sexton, those guys, which exactly that I was going to make that
Sexton.
Sound. That was the sound that my mind was ready
to
make.
Do you think Sexton could be like a 12?
Sexton's, that's a good point. He's another guy at 12. I mentioned Knox. Sexton's a good one where it's like, there's no way he falls to 16. Oh my God, he fell from 8 to like all our mocks had him going 8. He's
yeah.
there at 12.
If
what do
he's
we
there
do?
At 12, I could see them doing
they
that.
They want the
more.
Unprotected first next year. What do we do? He's our guy. That's what I think could happen.
Like, yeah.
I think the irrational fear of a lot of Suns fans has been, oh my gosh, they're going to trade like 6 picks for Kemba and he's on expiring. Even if he re-signs, like he's old. That's fair. That's completely fair.
Yeah.
Out of those guys, say Cleveland is at 8. I think, can we say Chicago or New York at all? Or do you not think so? Or
I
Philly?
I don't think so.
I think Philly is completely out of the realm of possibility. I think Chicago is sort of there. Same with New York. Just because the Suns can make the Godfather offer is what I've been prone to call it, is that they could offer 3 first-round picks, and it's like, man, how much do you love Justice Winslow? Like, that's what Danny Ainge did. He made the Godfather offer, and they turned it down. I think they're prone to the Godfather offer. I don't think Philly doesn't care. They're just going to take the best guy. 11, Charlotte, same thing. Clippers, 12, same thing. So let's look at 8, I guess, is the most realistic spot.
Yeah.
Who is the one guy out of those under the assumption, the heavy assumption now, especially after the press conference DeAndre Ayton had, that he is the pick at number 1, so I guess that kind of eliminates by default Wendell Carter.
Sad.
Yeah, it feels bad. Doncic Carter was like really fun in my brain for a bit. It's gone. Who do you like the most there?
Why not swing at Porter? Like, if he's there, his medicals aren't terrible. I think he might be there. But like for the Suns' sake, I know that's kind of putting Chris and Bender in a terrible situation, but hey, that's a talent who could be, even if he doesn't pan out, he very well could be like a top six talent. So you're,
can we add the caveat there that the Suns have his medicals, they feel fine about his medicals?
Yeah.
Because I think that's the obvious thing here, is that they're only going to do that if they think he's healthy and they think they can handle his load. So Porter, 6'10", very, very athletic. We just didn't get to see it in Missouri. That's a guy who would have a bunch of highlights out there of just like him doing like dunks in transition and just how fast he is with the ball at his size. Extremely fluid shooter. And I think that's where I look at him and say, from a Doncic standpoint, it's like we love his jump shot, but Porter is even more so that, where it's like I'm buying stock on his jump shot trending upwards.
Because he can get that jump shot anytime he wants, yeah.
He can. You worry about him taking more than two dribbles and making decisions and attacking the rim and stuff, but if you ask him to be a stretch four, I really like that. I really like him in a situation where he plays a little bit of four, plays a little bit of three, and Jackson, Bender, and let's say Warren is there. Let's say Warren's not there. You're mixing offense and defense together, so it's like, okay, when Josh is on the floor, he's playing with Porter. When Bender's on the floor, he's playing with the offensive guy like Warren.
Yeah.
There's a lot of switching stuff there. Ayton makes me a little nervous just because of defense. I think Porter profiles as a guy there who isn't a plus. And we don't know if he's going to be a negative. We just didn't really see him at Missouri. Has the athleticism, but that's we just have to check off the athleticism for him and his versatility there, and that's pretty much it. But I think he is the one guy when it goes from a, here's the opening we have, here's the needs we have, he checks them off. I think if you take DeAndre Ayton by default, you bump Trae Young down a couple spots. It's just the way it goes. You cannot take, I just... Do you think there's a possibility of them being interested in Trae Young still, even after taking Ayton?
Yeah, I think so.
I think they could talk themselves into Ayton's role at Arizona and all that kind of stuff, and saying like his defense isn't going to be so bad. And that, look, Young and Booker together already, you're causing serious issues there potentially. And you add Ayton to the mix, who has defensive question marks as well. How realistic is it to go after one of the Bridgeses without moving TJ Warren in that deal?
For 8?
Or 10 or 10. 11 or whatever. Yep.
I think you...
I'm saying from like a roster standpoint, it's like, okay, we have acquired Miles Bridges. We haven't given up TJ Warren. We have these three guys now.
Yeah. Either of the Bridgeses, even, you could say.
Yeah.
Would have to be, not necessarily in that move, obviously, but you could move him in another trade or something and pick up a future pick, I guess. But it's more, there's not room. So it's making your decision of, we want to be defense. We haven't seen enough from TJ Warren on that end or something. And we want more shooting, and we haven't seen enough from him on that end. But at the same time, like, that TJ is still like an average NBA player. And can still get better maybe a little bit. I don't know if he's topped out. So that's going to be telling also. Like, his contract, just people don't trade guys who are fresh off of contract extensions like that, that are, even though he's not that pricey, teams don't want to trade for that because, one, it's obviously on your books a long time, but it's also like, why did you just sign this guy to an extension only to trade him a year later? So that would be curious. But both Bridges is like, especially Mikal, like, he would fit anything, any team.
I think Mikal has positional versatility from 2 to 4. I think he can play 2, 3, 4 in a lot of different situations. Obviously a 3 by default. I think Miles can play some small ball 4, depending on who's there. And then I think even Miles, he's one of those things defensively where I just need to see him in the NBA for like 5 minutes. Just give me 5 minutes of tape on him in the NBA to see if he can guard like some twos. I think he can.
Yeah.
But I just need to, same with McCall, same thing. I think he has so much length and so much defensive know-how that he would be able to be there, and I would bet on it. But with Miles, I wouldn't bet on it, and I would just need to see it. That's where I think both of those guys are okay. I think even if you have TJ Warren and Josh Jackson and you're going to figure that out later and you just get one of those guys, I think it's still fine because you have room to play those guys at the four. You have room to play those guys at the two. This is something we're going to talk about way later, but I think Bender and Chris, I don't think either of those guys are locked in at four only. I think they're going to look to play Chris a lot at the five, or they might look to play Bender a lot at the five. One of those guys is going to play majority of their minutes at the five next year, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's a real possibility, especially with what they want to do with winning and everything, because they need to open up minutes at the four while still trying to get those guys minutes when they can.
Chris and Bender both have a lot of rim-protecting potential still. I think when as down as you can get on them after last season, I think both of them have shown enough where I can confidently say it's tough to finish around the rim with them if they... Well, Bender is more obviously in tune with where he's supposed to be, but like Chris bothered people. Like when he was in the right spots, he was trouble. So, yeah, I think I agree with you there that that's not necessarily an indictment on them if they would in this situation move up and draft four.
Okay, so looking at 6 through 12, how would you rank guys in terms of like we can just say at 10? Like if you're looking to move up to 11 or 12 or whatever. You can rank Sexton number one on your board if you want or whatever.
Okay.
Miner, Porter, McCall, and Miles. 1, 2, 3 in terms of who I'd move up for. I'm not moving up for Kevin Knox. I think he's
no.
Like, I have him as like a 15 to 17 range guy anyway. So that's my main influence there. Sexton, same sort of range for me. I think I have him like 11 or 12 on a Suns board, which would make sense for 11 or 12, but I'm not moving up for him either.
Okay, I'm with you. I'm Porter, McCall. Who should I do? I don't know. I might be Sexton. Like,
okay.
If it's like 12, I'm not moving up to like up past 10 probably for him.
Okay, let's say McCall or Porter both are available at number 8. Cleveland is willing to talk. What is your offer?
Ooh. You kind of have to throw in 2 firsts.
So what are the firsts?
16.
Yeah. I'd do top 10 protected next year.
Suns own pick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's still appeal of it being a lottery pick, but if the Suns just, it doesn't go well, from everything we know, and this has to be their plan in the front office, they want to finish with at least like 35 wins.
I would toss 21 in there too, like if I had to, but...
31?
No, the 2021 Miami pick. Yeah,
okay.
Sorry.
So I would do 16, the top 10 protected pick. I would also do 31 if it helped push things. 31 would be the first thing I would do if it would push things over. And then if not, I would go to the Milwaukee pick after that.
Yeah.
I would actually go Milwaukee pick first, then the Miami pick second. And then third is where I would say, like, okay, what about TJ Warren? Because I'm not crazy about giving up a bunch of picks and TJ Warren in a deal, but if it gets it absolutely across and we're picking up a guy who plays 3 and 4 or a guy who plays 2 through 4, like those two guys, I think I'm willing to do it. So I'll just say for the sake of being having a clear answer here, I would do 16, a top 10 protected pick next year, the Milwaukee pick as those three. They would move down 8 spots. They would pick up a potential lottery pick next year, and I guess the Milwaukee pick for Giannis tears his knee. There's an amazing asset all of a sudden.
That's a big if.
Yeah, it's probably going to be in the 20 to 25 range because they have a real head coach next season.
Jason Kidd wasn't.
I think that's what I would do. And I think they should in that situation for one of those guys.
Yeah, I just...
Okay.
Those teams are all... I just see, like, those teams need picks. I think 12 is, like, more realistic. But, like, if one of the bridges are there, then that, to me, is, like, a realistic thing that the Suns should do.
We didn't get into trading down yet because we're going to have a future podcast coming later this week where we talk about veteran targets, and that's going to include situations like, okay, the Suns trade down from 16 to here and they get this veteran on an expiring deal or whatever. We're going to hit on that
In the next thrilling episode, names on that list.
Kevin Zimmerman, to end the podcast, will the Suns make a selection at number 16 overall on June 21st?
Yeah.
I think so, too. I think it's just really hard to get deals done.
So we just wasted half an hour of our time?
No, it was fun. I like trade speculation is the best speculation.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks for listening.